Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Ashes Central podcast. This is our day one recap of the Hobart Test. Australia at stump 6 for 241. The last session interrupted by rain, so we only got through 59.3 overs. It was a day that started with much jubilation and joy for England, having Australia 3 for 12 after winning the toss and having a bowl. Warner gone for a duck, Khawaja gone for 6, and Stephen Smith gone for a two-ball duck. However, for the Aussies, Travis Head again the hero on return from COVID, 101 off 113 deliveries. Just a really enthralling innings. Vaship, Ethan Prabhakaran, and Pearson Lynch with you. We'll start with you, Prabs. I guess another example for Australia, the depth in their batting that, you know, when the top order fails, someone like Head can come in and really, you know, help out Australia out in a time of need.
Yeah, it was a great counter-attack by Labuschagne, Head and Green. But I just do wonder how much of that's due to, you know, good batting and how much of that is due to the conditions. It was quite a puzzling pitch. We've got a stat for you here that the first session had the second most movement of all the sessions this series. 61% of deliveries bowled moved more than 0.75 degrees, which is the cutoff mark for a delivery that moves quite a bit. So the first session had the second most movement this series. The second session had the third least movement this series. 21% of balls were above that 0.75 cutoff mark. So the conditions changed pretty much inexplicably. You might credit that to new ball bowling, but England looked well on top of the start. They were 3 for 12. You know, Warner, Smith, ducks. I was thinking, you know, there's a chance we could get rolled, you know, for 80 here. And it was just counter-attacking cricket from Labuschagne and Head. Australia were going at 10 and over in the period after that, and they really counter-attacked against Wood and Wokes. And so as soon as the first change bowls came on, you know, Australia sort of made it their game and put England back on the back foot. And I think from where they were at 3 for 12, 6 for 241 is a great effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Pearson, we'll start with those opening few overs and obviously Stuart Broad and Ollie Robinson opening up. This is what England have been asking for, and English fans have been asking for. Similar to Australia, who've had a lot of success with the top order, right, in the opening few overs, putting the ball in a good position, you know, allowing the pitch or the swing to do what it was, and then taking wickets with the new ball. As I suppose, promising as that was, how did it make you feel? How devastating was it when the first change bowlers come in? Again, it could have been conditions. You look at Wood and Wokes, both going for really run rates in charge of, you know, in success of 5 and 6. Do you put that more down to the good, you know, counter-attack from Travis Head, or do you think they probably could have bowled better after those first changes?
Well, the opening 10 overs were very much what you'd expect from England, is that it was easily the most English conditions of the series to date. I thought we got a new ball that moved and nipped on a green top, and there's no side better exploiting those conditions than England's are. Granted, I think we sorely missed Anderson as that extra control bowler to come in next, or even Robinson to come in his first change and him open. But I thought we started brilliantly. I thought Wood was poor. I don't think this is a pitch that suits Wood to the same degree it does the swing and accuracy bowlers. I think on a pitch like this, well, it's green tops more generally, that raw pace bowler is less effective. So I don't think this was ever destined to be one of Wood's great test matches. I thought Wokes was poor. I thought there was a lot on him because it didn't look a pitch to suit Wood. And I don't think Wokes lived up to expectations. And of course, we were severely hampered by Ollie Robinson getting an injury in the first session of the day. Because when you only go in with a side of four bowlers and you're arguably your best seamer up to that point gets injured with 2/3 of the day remaining, you will have quite clear issues. So I thought first 12 overs excellent. Next, well, the remainder of the session was an excellent fight back from you. I thought the bowling was poor, but not much I can say other than average bowling against a slightly older ball and terrifically good batting, at least until that embarrassing Labuschagne dismissal, which I still review in my head with great pleasure.
Yeah, we'll get onto that shortly. The other, I guess, fact in the opening few overs that for the most part, England's fielding was better in the slips. They Crawley with a couple of catches. He did, you know, make a blunder there, diving in front of Root on one occasion that would have had Khawaja out for a little less. Ultimately, as Pearson does point out, the partnership there between Marnus Labuschagne and Travis Head took them all the way from 3-for-12 to 4-for-83. And as you mentioned, you know, started looking quite confident at the crease before, how should we say, a Stuart Broad York, I guess you could say, kind of, it's really hard to explain this dismissal.
Honest, it was a half volley on the
half. I'll give him.
We got lucky because he played a ridiculous shot.
I mean, how
it was hardly high class bowling, unless it was part of a setup. Like
he got himself bowled around his legs, but the ball was kind of on middle and leg, and he kind of just kind of. That's a speechless dismissal, but one I guess we're more accustomed because Labuschagne's always been a bit of a bizarre cricketer in his kind of mannerisms, I guess. But it was, I don't know what you two made of it. Prabs, what did you think when you were watching that dismissal?
Oh, it was a puzzling shot, wasn't it? I think, well, at least what I thought was, I think a couple of overs earlier against Wokes, he stepped across his stumps and flicked Wokes over the mid-wicket before. And I think he was trying to recreate that shot against Broad, but his front foot has slipped and gone way further than he wanted it to go. And then it just left the whole stumps vacant. But it was quite comical how he ended up on the ground there, and Broad certainly looked like he was claiming it as his own, you know, quality bowling.
You don't say. I've never seen someone so excited about a wicket that, you know, didn't really deserve it. And you talk about it being comical, kind of falling over. Ricky Ponting, in one of his last test matches, got out LBW and just for no reason fell forward onto the pitch. And that was exactly what this reminded me of. And I think it's a great point, Pearson, in the conditions. I think Channel 7 in their opener, Mel McLaughlin or someone said to Beefy, this must be like being at home for you. And he made a joke about it still being too hot. I think it was 21 degrees. But certainly in terms of kind of constant gloominess and kind of damp conditions, and you mentioned 8 millimetres, they say, of green grass on the pitch. So certainly a good toss for when you were feeling in the first 30, 40 minutes. They really dominated. But again, as you've mentioned, Pearson, when they brought on those first change bowlers, kind of struggling there. We talk about Travis Head, and we've got to get into this in a bit more depth. You know, we talk about some good fight back innings. England had the opportunity and would bowl really early in using a couple of good short balls, and they seemed to trouble Travis Head. But then that kind of tactic went out the window, and they went to bowling what a left-hander loves, which is kind of half volleys, a bit shorter than that, outside off stump. And it was like a one-day game. He's rocking on the back foot and just not even foot to the pitch of the ball, just, you know, using his hand-eye coordination and power, and they're rocketing to the fence. And it didn't seem like England adjusted quick enough, Pearson. What were your thoughts on quite a crucial period there where England probably had a chance to change up their tactics but didn't, and it cost them dearly?
I think it's very interesting to note the contrasting fortunes of the two players that were fighting to bat at five. One of them performed early in the series, came back, hit a brilliant ton. The other was shunted up the order and honestly looked like going out at any time. I still don't think in these conditions against good bowling, Khawaja is an opener. But I think
he's found a way to turn this into a negative about Khawaja when the question was about the England tactics. And
I'm getting on to Head. What I would just is in the same way as Khawaja emulated Harris's performances in the series, Head emulated what Khawaja did at Sydney. They were both came in against that slightly older ball. I mean, granted, he came in at the 10 over mark, but it was almost at the end of that opening spell. I know I've played in a game, as I think as Ethan, in which we lost 7 for to the new ball, and our number 10, our fellow podcast member Tebwern Jarvis, top scored because he only had to face the second change bowlers. And I think we saw a similar iteration of that here. I thought clearly Head was very impressive. I think he and Labuschagne fed off each other. I think looking at that Labuschagne dismissal, it was in keeping with the way they were trying to play the game, of trying to push the rate along, of saying this is a difficult pitch to bat on. It felt a lot like a county game, actually, in which a quickfire 50 felt more valuable than a painstaking 30 off 100. So I thought he definitely read the conditions right, Head, and he batted well. I think the key thing with Head is you must cramp him for space when you bowl. Is generally, there were a few times that he almost chopped onto his stumps, and I still think when you cramp him, he looks uncomfortable. That might go in with the idea you were mentioning of him looking unsettled against the short ball. When balls come into him, he looks a lot less nervous. He eats into width extremely well. Not hugely dissimilar to a few of your other batsmen, not least Marcus Harris, who he's replaced in the side. So I think we bowled too wide to him. He did get somewhat lucky with conditions. I know Ethan seems to have finally resorted to looking at CricViz in this test, and he had the stat earlier that reflected the changing conditions that made it easier for batting. But I think we bowled consistently wide to him, and our best bowler to left-handers, Ollie Robinson's absence, was felt quite starkly there. Although I would say, despite it being a brilliant ton, he probably could have gone on and made that into a particularly match-winning 150-plus, which he wasn't able to do. Same with Green, 77, which I suspect we'll come to.
Yeah, the dismissal, the ball after the 100, very similar to the ball two overs before, kind of chipping it over. I mean, the one, two balls before, excuse me. That wasn't far away from a wicket, just over a bit. Wokes could have been the bowler at that time over his head. The second one goes straight to mid on fieldsman. You talk about Travis Head and being more of a one-day batsman. The fastest hundreds of this Ashes series, I can't believe 85 balls in Brisbane, that 100. That's hard to remember now. And 112 balls, this one in Hobart. And he has the three fastest 50s of this Ashes series. Fun fact, Zach Crawley has the fourth fastest 50 of this Ashes series. Now, I want a one-word answer from you guys here, and I stress one word, Pearson. At this current moment, is Travis Head the favourite for man of the series or player of the series? Prabs, you're first. Yes or no?
Yes.
Pearson?
Yes. Yeah, probably.
No. What happened to one word there?
Yeah, two's fine.
Well, I was more than that. Anyway, moving on. You mentioned Cam Green. Certainly want to move on to that. Someone who had been out of form with the bat, had a good score in the second innings up in Sydney, now follows it up here. 74 of 109 deliveries. We'll start with the good because I know we've got some thoughts on his dismissal. Perhaps your thoughts on this and finally stringing together two solid, you know, half century innings. What does this do for his confidence and his place in the side?
Yeah, well, straying away from CricViz with the stats, I think I mentioned last podcast that he averaged 13 in the first innings of Test, 9 in the second innings, and 68 now in the third innings. He's obviously turned that around with his first 50 in the first or second innings. But one thing I wanted to point out was actually the strike rates in those respective innings. In the first and second innings, he strikes at 31, and in the third innings at 51. And today he struck at 68. So it does seem when he strikes at a higher rate, he's a much better batsman. And he came out today with new confidence, new aggression. And almost from, you know, the first 10 balls, you could see this was a different Cam Green to the one who just hung at the crease and was, you know, 10 off 50. I mean, it was very impressive to see, you know, he played, you know, pretty well, much improved from before. So it seems to me that he's taken a lot of confidence from the 74. He's batting with intent, following in the suit of Labuschagne and Head before him. And it was an impressive innings, and a bit of a shame that he couldn't go all the way to 100.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I do want to talk about his dismissal, and I will, Pearson, give you a chance if you want to talk about his innings also. But as for the dismissal, you know, gets the 74, Mark Wood comes back on. He's still going at over 7.5 at this time. I think it was something like 8 overs for 62 at this time when Wood was on. It could have been a little more. They have the two men out. He's bowling. I think the entire over they showed on Channel 7 was all kind of short balls, just, you know, laying the trap and waiting for him to bite at one. And he does. And I know he's out there and he made a nice score of 74, but I'm going to call it a lazy dismissal. I think you really can't afford to just be falling. Oh, okay, I've made 74. I've done my thing. Go on and get your first test 100. And as Pearson says, put this game away in the first innings. Travis Head couldn't do it, but he did get to 100. You know, you've out there experience. You really should be able to. It was not a well-guided pull shot, you know, swallowed by the man out there who was Crawley again, actually. Pearson, your thoughts, I know you want to say, on the innings as a whole, but also on the dismissal.
Excellent innings. It was quite comfortably the best innings Green has played in the Test arena. I would say, before we go on about the intent and how wonderful the intent was, there is some level of drawbacks on the statistics that Ethan has quoted there, in that as a general rule of thumb, the more runs you hit, the higher your strike rate will be, because you will get more set at the crease. You look at someone like Pujara, when he scores 50s, he strikes it significantly higher than he does when he scores under 50. Because, of course, the more time you spend at the crease, the more easily runs flow. Even for an aggressive player like Head, his strike rate from 25 to 50 was a lot lower than it was from 50 to 100, although his first 25 was very quick. But yeah, I thought it was an excellent knock. I'm still not fully convinced on him technically. I think he's definitely a confidence batsman. I think we've seen it was the same in the India series last year. He builds off scores that he got in previous games. I think it does lead into confidence ruts that we saw in the first three tests of this, or first three and a half of this series. But I think when he gets a string of scores together, he is the kind of player that could have a prolonged run of good form. I still don't fully trust his defensive game, but I liked the intent up until the dismissal. The dismissal was a poor shot. As I've mentioned earlier with Head, I think that's the second time this innings in which neither batsman was able to kick on and really put the game to bed. I think this is a pitch in which a score of 350-400 is match winning. So I think if either of those players could have converted their 77 to 130 or their 100 to 150, then that could have been a match winning innings. So I do think you've been slightly wasteful. I think your highest score of the series, by that Head knock, no one that's hit a ton has passed 130 except for Khawaja once. So I would say
that's a ridiculous stat.
It is true. Generally speaking,
does that prove?
What I'm suggesting is Smith has gone out in the 90s. Warner has gone out in the 90s twice, and Labuschagne's only 100 was 103. Although you've dominated this series, you haven't hit the daddy hundreds one would expect you to hit. That's all I'm suggesting it. And I think
hundreds, how many of them have been daddy hundreds, as you call them?
I'd say there's been what, seven scores over 90, and one of those seven.
Well, if
seven
you're using
90
as
a daddy
overall,
100,
but that's...
that was, yeah, but 90 is worse. To have three scores in the 90s is not ideal. I mean, it's better than England, who have about 100 scores in the single figures.
Yeah.
But it is true. You could have been more dominant than you had been if either of those two had gone on today.
Okay.
I think it's a good comeback, but you could have been 4 for 240, not 6 for 240.
Just a couple of points, and we'll move on more to the English bowling attack. First of all, talking of Cam Green, our colleague William Geary is very positive on him, so we'll have to get him on someday to tell us, you know, why he's the greatest all-rounder we're ever going to have as a nation. And the other point, just taking a look, interesting to see South Africa winning by 7 wickets in the third test versus India.
Good.
A 2-1 series lead. I don't think anybody's not happy about on this podcast. Shameful scenes with Virat Kohli having a go at the TV cameras and the DRS yesterday. But that's for another time. If we get some rain, that's a great series to dive into perhaps on another day podcast. The England bowling, we've mentioned briefly about how the openers were very good. The first changes where that really got away from them. They've got a stat here because we're all giving our 2 cents as far as stats are concerned. Seven of the first 9 overs were maidens. So in the 9th over, England had their 7th maiden. Their 8th maiden wasn't until the 44th over. So you couldn't bowl one maiden in what's that 30, was that 35, 36 overs, which I think really tells where the game got away from England there. Kind of a lot to target here. We talked about their bowling to Head. I want to talk about when Head's in the 90s, Prab. We've seen this in previous, this is when Joe Root's come on to bowl. They don't have a specialist spinner. They don't play Leach. We've seen this in previous tests, very defensive field set. You might have a deep cover or a deep mid wicket, and you're just giving away a single on either side of the wicket. Head went, it wasn't the 100 itself, but I think Head went from maybe 95 to 99, just hitting singles either side of the wicket. And then they're 10 overs behind on over rate, and he wants to like make him think about it on 99. So he walks down to talk to his bowler, that which acted no good. I mean, Head scored 100 off the next ball. What is this tactic from England? We talk about overly defensive. There's been a lot of criticism about Joe Root from a captaincy perspective. I really don't understand it.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, 7 of the first 9 overs were maidens, yet the run rates for the innings is above 4. So Australia were really rolling through that middle period. And I think Joe Root didn't know how to contain the runs. There was a period there with, you know, 10 and over, and Woods gone at 7 and over this innings, Wokes is at 4.5. And I think eventually it shifted from, let's, you know, try and put pressure and roll the Aussies here to how can we contain runs and stop the momentum. And I think Joe Root, his way of doing that was probably just chuck people on the boundaries. But yeah, as you mentioned, it's not great captaincy, is it? Especially when someone's in the 90s, he's just going to munch on the singles all day. And sometimes you've got to, you know, take the risk of conceding the runs at a higher rate, but still look for wickets in sort of nothing cricket if you just give away one for the sake of it and try and dry out the momentum. So, yeah, I think lots of people have been commenting that Joe Root's probably missed a trick there and it's been overly defensive pretty much the whole series. So that's probably something they can look into for the West Indies series.
Yeah, absolutely. Pearson, obviously, you're a very passionate fan. Thoughts on Joe Root? Is it getting more and more frustrating as the series is going on for you, the way the tactics seem to unfold on the field?
A weird one, because I thought tactically he was quite strong in the first session. And I think as a general rule of thumb, his captaincy when we're in reasonable positions and things are roughly going away is actually very good. When he can attack, I rate his captaincy. As soon as momentum shifts away from England, he does lose his head a little. What I will say is we're in a weird situation in which no other test series this decade have a higher percentage of players gone out in the 90s relative to scoring 100s. In which three of the eight scores over 90 haven't been converted. I wouldn't blame that for a second on Root, but it does beg the question why 40% of innings haven't been converted from 90 to 100. I don't think that's Root, but I would say we are too defensive, and I think a lot of those were quite lucky. I think you'll, Warner in Adelaide is a prime example where he just went to swing wildly and somehow picked out cover. So I think admittedly some of that can be explained by luck. But I think there's a limit to how much you can say his captaincy lost us the game today. I think a lot of it was poor bowling after the first 10 overs. If you don't bowl at the stumps, you will concede runs. We bowled too much short and wide, and it did at times force Root into defensive fields he wouldn't have wanted to play.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm not saying he's the sole... Obviously, he can only go based on what the bowlers are bowling. Yes. I just thought it was a curious decision when he himself was bowling. But you said a lot of people going out in the 90s. Well, if that's the case, it may be a deficiency with the Australians game. Set an aggressive field and try and get them out in the 90s.
I couldn't agree more. It begs the question why we've been successful in dismissing players in the 90s. Because tactically, we've brought on, I know for both of Khawaja's hundreds, the bowler he faced to get there was Dawid Malan. And then, of course, today we had Joe Root bowling while Travis Head was in the 90s. And we had... In the Labuschagne innings in Adelaide, we had that awful Ben Stokes bouncer barrage. So we're not good at picking the right bowlers in those moments. But I do feel as soon as a player gets a start, it's part of Root's wider tendency to just defend. Until you're on 150, we should attack more, particularly on a pitch like this. And I think it's problematic for England going forward if we keep doing that.
Yeah, certainly one of the more interesting days I think we've seen of Test cricket in this series. And an interesting discussion we've just had. Prabs, we'll start with you looking ahead to tomorrow. What are we expecting? I haven't looked at the rain rate or anything like that, but what's a good score for Australia? We don't need to be pushing six down, of course, now, but Mitchell Starc, one of the better batsmen this series, so they shouldn't have any concerns there. And then what do Australia have to do with the new ball to make some early inroads like the English did?
Yeah, it's a tough one because the new ball is 20 overs away, so I wouldn't think we'll get to that. But six for 241, I think Australia would love 350, but that's going to probably be too far away unless Mitch Starc can chip in. But, you know, something above 300, maybe a 320-ish would be a good score for Australia. And then I think that they'll just have to go hard with the new ball. You think if England caught Labuschagne today and got head in the first five overs, if they got us five for 30-odd, that could have been really interesting. And I think Australia's going to try and replicate that, but just take all the chances. And based off how the ball played today, I think Australia will want, you know, two to three quick wickets, get Joe Root out within 10 overs, and then really try and put the pressure on the whole way through the innings rather than allowing for a counter-attack in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely. Pearson, what are the English expectations for tomorrow's play? How many are we limiting Australia to? And then again, what's the key to the top order staying in as the Australians weren't able to do?
Well, England's aim is pretty simple. It's get Australia all out for less than 300. Whether we can do that, I'm not sure. Personally, I think they'll be all out in the region of 320. Which I don't think is a dominant total, but is above par sufficiently to probably force an advantage in the first innings and probably win the test. My suspicion is they'll hit 320. We would have liked 280-odd. I think the key will be how your new ball bowlers bowl. possibly this is controversial, but I think in the conditions we've had, Robinson and Broad suit the new ball better than the Australian new ball bowlers do. So I don't think you'll get us to 3 for 12, but I do think we obviously have the weaker top order batsmen. I think we'll have you all out by lunch for 320, and I think we'll finish the day 5 down for about 170-odd, which gives us, what, 150 in arrears and 5 down. And I think, I mean, you think you look forward, and that leads to probably a 50 to 100-run deficit, then you can drill home that advantage. I think you'll win. I think this will be the smallest winning margin of the series thus far, though.
Okay, looking very far ahead in his prediction.
He's got the binos on.
Exactly. I don't think it's a controversial statement to say that the England bowlers are better suited with the conditions with the new ball. But as you've said, the big issue there is that your top order batsman, aside from Crawley, of course, with that form, who knows? Maybe this is the test that Joe Root comes out and actually makes that ton.
Be said, in defence of the top order, is Warner's never been great against swing. Khawaja's record in the top three in these conditions, which are very light England, are poor. And Labuschagne hit runs, so there's nothing you can do.
He's making sure he gets all
if
his
one of ours.
He was dropped
that.
On zero, wasn't he?
Yeah exactly. Nah. It is worth noting, excluding the drop catch, your top four hit a combined. Did your top four even reach 50 combined? I'm not sure you did. So I think there's a reasonable chance if Marcus was out
when he was dropped. Is that what you're saying?
Well, he was. Well, no, not including the drop.
It was,
he hit
it was
44.
0, 0, 6, 44, and 0.
So they combined exactly for 4 for 50, your top four. I think England can outperform that. I don't think the middle order can outperform yours. I don't see a player hitting a century in a 70. And I think that's
the story of the day, as far as I'm concerned. Australia's batting depth and, you know, English failure, you know, with their backup bowlers and a little bit on tactics, I'm going to have to say.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see you back here tomorrow to see if any of these come to fruition and what England can do when they get to bat in Hobart. Until then, thanks for being with me, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll see you all tomorrow. Until then, enjoy your cricket.